Good day, my lovely friends. How are you doing? How's your life going on? It's the final day of the week. Is it a profitable week for you? Is it going great? If I look back at the week, I'm extremely happy. I got it working to start my own video channel on YouTube. So on audio, on video, on online, and now I simply need to get it also on offline markets or simply build that listener base. Next week will be exciting with all those great, beautiful guests that I'm going to interview. It's going to be lovely. Don't forget, you can submit your questions on why you need to make a business plan or ask for any tips, guides, or whatever. Because Wednesday I will interview Nick Howard. Nick is a business banker and a business mentor for NatWest. That's a British business, British bank, and basically we're gonna talk about the importance of the business plan. It's gonna be cool, it's gonna be lovely. I sincerely hope that you enjoy it. Having that said, just please sign up to the podcast, sign up to the YouTube channel, and simply let me know what you think about it. And I thought it was time for me to have a chat with you about the world, because we have some hurricanes going over the Caribbean, and as a Dutch guy, I hear definitely a lot of that's happening in Sint Maartenique, or in Dutch we say it's Sint Maarten. It's an island. We have it from our colonial time when we want liberation, peace, and Christian faith, and definitely the great business of slave transport. And well, we have an island there, and the French had it on a different island. It was for that time not that uncommon to simply split an island. For example, the Dutchies also had 50% of Gibraltar, something that not so many people realize. And that was given up in exchange for the independence of the Netherlands. So it's just a bit how it works. And Sint Maarten has a special place. It's a special state of the Netherlands, city of the Netherlands. Well, the French part is part of the French socialistic government with European subsidies and more of those things. This part is just being nothing, being a city. And you see literally that when the hurricane came over, the ministers in The Hague said, well, we're gonna give a ring. Oh, risk no telephone. Okay, that's it. And look, don't get me wrong, it's terrible what happens, but there's nothing I can do against it, there's nothing we can do against it, and I'm just wondering now, KLM is going to send an aircraft with a cargo capacity, how it's going to land, because only small aircrafts can land, and that's just... And you see this with every crisis, natural disaster, whatever, and I would simply do it differently. I would simply go to a big airport nearby, which is out of the danger zone. So let's say for common sake stories that you go to Atlanta or Panama City airport, and you simply, everyone flies everything with big aircrafts to that airport. From there you bring it to small aircrafts and get them out, but get the aircraft flying out every 10-15 minutes, and then get the operation going in that way. Because to give you a clue, when everyone was evacuating people from Libya, what you saw was, for example, a military DC-10 was landing in Eindhoven with 200 seats. And the aircraft had 70 people aboard. At the same time, the same day, Ryanair had a flight with 150 people from Malta. And that aircraft also came from Malta. And you saw, but I was shocked to see that when they were evacuating, only a few countries came to the idea to also simply bring the people to safety to Malta, there, get them on. But there is no need to, for example, if you go to London, there is no need to have a military aircraft flying from Malta to London. There are 20 flights a day, so why make the problems? And then, okay, sure, Ryanair is not the greatest service, but hey, I think that Ryanair is better than bullets flying over your head. So it's just something that I would say that on this moment there should be a great public-private partnership, and you should, because you could make it more efficient. And then it was just stupid to see, and then it makes no sense to me, all that waste of money. I mean, and yes, it is terrible for the people over there. It is shocking. It's shocking, it's terrible, but what can I do against it? I mean, I don't say it's global warming. I mean, I'm really a climate skeptic. And the reason I'm skeptic is that I'm just looking at data, and the environmental lobbyists are pushing an agenda with inefficient policy, which is good politics, bad economics, and get me policy and projects that are good economics. I'm not against sustainable energy. I mean, I think it's insane that in Spain it's not allowed to put solar panels on. I mean, put the full country full, but as the European Union decided, they're gonna put a hydrogen dome in Mauritania. That's one of the driest countries in the world. It's in the desert in Africa, and they're gonna build a hydrogen and a power plant for with water to fill with sand. Yeah, I don't think that's gonna work. It's based on money. I would just get solar panels out there. That makes more sense. In Norway, use water energy. I mean, it makes more sense to me. And then I would say that it's time, and I'm wondering about something, would you mind it, would you value it if I would start accepting Bitcoin in my webshop? What do you think about it? Should Hofprofit.com also accept Bitcoin to partner on the blockchain revolution and innovation? Should I integrate it or not? I mean, it is something that I'm wondering about, and what do you think? Simply let me know. You can send me a tweet, you can tweet me at Lodewijkhof. And having said, I think it's time to move on with the interview. It's gonna be a great show. I'm really honored to have this guest. Peter Keller is an entrepreneur. He started his own company. That's great. And he started his company from his garage. And it's now a seven-figure company. And I love those type of people because they are inspirational. And you can learn so much from them. I mean, do you have a company with seven-figure turnover? No? Well, and then at least I would say listen to what he has to say because you can learn from it, so here we go. Peter, very warm welcome to the show. Very warm welcome and welcome on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Could you describe for our listeners what you are doing? And then especially...
Yeah, absolutely.
And especially what your company is doing, because I saw that you built your company from your garage.
I did, yes. So the company that I founded and now the CEO of is Fringe Sport, and you can find us online at fringesport.com. We're an e-commerce company that largely serves the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. What we're doing is we're manufacturing barbells, kettlebells, bumper plates, basically everything that you would see in a functional fitness gym. Mm-hmm. And we deliver those through e-commerce channels to the U.S. And we're a, let's say, high seven-figure revenue company. Mm-hmm. We've been around for about 7 years. And like you mentioned, I did start the company out of my garage, and that's something that's very near and dear to us. Mm-hmm. Because there are many people who are building garage gyms, and that's where they kick a car out of the garage, kick the car out, and build up a gym in their garage. And that's really our main customer. Okay. Our second customer base would be people who are building commercial gyms, and so a little bit on the B2B side. So that's what we're doing.
Okay. And what choice do you go for e-commerce channels as yourself and not the traditional channels?
I'm an e-commerce guy. Mm-hmm. Ever since I was a little kid, I wanted to sell things. And in fact, when I was in middle school and high school, I did sell candy and, you know, various small little entrepreneurial ventures to my friends. Mm-hmm. And when I went to college, the dot-com boom was happening. And I saw e-commerce and was just absolutely entranced. I said, oh, well, no longer do I have to be in front of someone or send you a catalog or something like that. I can just have a website and I can sell to you. So I joined an e-commerce company when I was an undergrad in college, and actually worked with it for 10 years, learning the ropes and also learning marketing, learning product design, excuse me, sure. And learning all that sort of thing. And then after a decade, which is crazy to me to think, I then jumped and did my own thing in an area that I was passionate about. And that's why I chose e-commerce versus traditional commerce.
Okay, and how do you see that e-commerce is changing the economy?
I mean, it's crazy. I always think of myself as one data point. You know, it's not, mm-hmm. not that my experience is everyone else's experience, but I hate to shop at a normal store now. I always love to use e-commerce.
I can recognize that one.
You know, yeah, exactly. Now, that is one data point. I mean, it is very clear that more and more retail is moving online. And at least here in the U.S., we're seeing the degradation and even failure of a number of very traditional retail chains, even as e-commerce continues to grow and grow and grow. So while the share of wallet, so to speak, of e-commerce versus more traditional retail channels is increasing, we also are seeing, of course, Amazon in the U.S., and to a lesser extent worldwide, even more of that e-commerce pie. So as time goes on, of course, we're seeing the trend of e-commerce just continue to go up and up and up. But at the same time, we're also seeing that there's a clear winner, 800 gorilla in the base course, and is Amazon. That even as e-commerce talking to more retailers pie, Amazon is disproportionate share there. So I don't know if this is a little bit too dry or what you're looking for, but that's really what I see going on in e-commerce.
That's just what I'm looking for. Great, just commented. Now, if you look at what you saw here in the Netherlands, there's a lot of shop closings and companies are going bankrupt. Is there any chance that e-commerce would fill the gap that city centers get, or is it basically city centers are over, in your opinion?
Man, that's a great question and something that I've not thought about a lot. I do think a lot about what's happening in e-commerce. I haven't thought so much about what's happening in city centers. That said, I think something I think about a lot right now is power laws, where I'm going to explain this really poorly. So if anyone wants to Google power laws, a better explanation, that's great. But essentially, in many economies or in many different environments, you have a winner that wins disproportionately. Just as I had mentioned, Amazon is running away with a lot of the e-commerce pie, to mix my metaphors up here. You know, Amazon is doing so because of a power law, because it continues to rack up gains disproportionate to the market. Or, for example, Facebook, who I think just recently mentioned that they have 200 billion, excuse me, not 200 billion, 2 billion active users, which is far above all other competitors. And so when you ask about like what's happening to city centers, my somewhat ignorant speculation would be that you're going to have a relatively small number of winners that kind of come and fill in those city centers. Mm-hmm. So I did live in Spain for this summer in Barcelona, but I'm of course mostly familiar with the U.S. from my own experience. And what I've been seeing here, which is a more broad-based trend, is that in the 70s and 80s there was what is called white flight, where there had been at one time thriving city centers, and then people left the city centers and the city centers became somewhat run down and maybe crime ridden, that sort of thing. But now there's a trend to revitalize those city centers, but they're not being revitalized in the same way as they were before. So I think that there are a lot fewer, let's say, retail type options when the city centers are revitalized, and a lot more entertainment and eating places and things like that come in, which I think is something that can be in-person experience can be very difficult to replicate online, whether it be e-commerce or something else. This is a long and rambling answer of saying that I don't know, but these are a few trends that I see.
Let's begin with looking at the trends and take it from there. But let's go back to the e-commerce, the really fun joy of having your shops and having the e-commerce channels and the platforms out. When Amazon, as you mentioned earlier, taking a really big pie of the complete cake of e-commerce turnaround and turnover and profits. So is there an option to work outside or without Amazon and make a decent living out of an e-commerce solution?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm doing it, so I think it can be done.
So how are you
doing
it?
One thing that I would mention is, sorry, there you go.
Yeah.
So I think that Amazon is a channel as well as a competitor, which I think everyone or most people think of it that way right now. It's actually fairly easy to build up a brand on Amazon. It's a lot more difficult to build a brand off Amazon these days. And so what I'm doing is I'm mainly building my brand off of Amazon with a little bit of assist from Amazon as a channel. And what I feel you need to do in order to do that is you need to build a brand that actually has resonance with your customers. So let's take my brand, for example, Fringe Sport. We are very active in the functional fitness community, both online, offline, in Austin, and kind of more broadly in the US. And we're really trying to make a resonance with our customers that it means something to them to shop with us, and that we deliver something to them that they can't get from Amazon. So Amazon, to my mind, is extremely transactional space. I'm not really sure what the conversion rate on Amazon is, but I've heard estimates that it's wildly high because people basically go there to buy something. In some cases to research, but usually not to, let's say, browse for pleasure or something like that. And if you think of people who are, if you think of e-commerce marketing as a funnel where you've got top of funnel, which is basically awareness, you've got middle of funnel, which is consideration, and then you've got bottom of funnel, which is conversion. A lot of people are not going to Amazon for the awareness stage. And when you think about marketing, people who are coming to your site from the awareness stage are going to be the lowest converting people because they need to drop further down that funnel. So they need to go from awareness to consideration to conversion. Now, when people are coming to Amazon, they're at the consideration and then conversion stage of funnel. So I think that Amazon does not serve the awareness stage of funnel very well. And what companies that are competing against Amazon can do much better than Amazon can is they can serve that awareness stage with really excellent content that grabs the customer. And then when you grab someone with really great awareness stage, top of funnel content, you can then drive them down to consideration and conversion on your site versus having them bounce and go to Amazon. So again, this is maybe a little drier than you were looking for, but that's how I think you compete with Amazon and build something that is meaningful, is that you view Amazon as a channel, and then you also try to stoke a very strong brand awareness and brand value in your customers with a lot of top of funnel awareness stage content.
sounds like a lot of fun, a lot of work to me, but that's life. It's all one big party, at least in my opinion. But having that said, on Amazon, how do you look at the Googles, the Facebooks, and the search engines and the social media as part of for any e-commerce venture and web shop to begin?
So you absolutely have to be looking at all of those. I am a big fan. I'm kind of old school because I'd mentioned that I went to college during the dot-com boom. And so back then, it was SEO, SEO, SEO. And so I've still been very steeped in this, you know, SEO mindset of potentially very inexpensive but very, very lucrative marketing. And so I'm a huge believer in SEO. And I'm also a huge believer in the fact that many people get SEO wrong just by messing up the very fundamental building blocks of SEO. So I think that people make mistakes on the easy things, and that screws up their SEO, rather than making mistakes on the hard things screwing up their SEO. So SEO is really fundamental to what people should be focusing on for e-commerce. Moving on from that, I have seen a lot of my friends really build up awesome businesses on social media. I will say that social is not something, it's kind of a paradox. It's not something that Fringe Sport does very well. So we actually get quite a bit of traffic from SEO, but not a ton of traffic from social channels, which is something that we're trying to work on now because it's a low-hanging fruit. But, you know, for an example of social media done really well, I would look at Beard Brand. So Beard and, you know, what a man grows on his face, brand.com. And they really have an awesome YouTube following. And they've built their business on YouTube. So it's something that I've been looking at, trying to figure out how do we do that for Fringe Sport. That said, I think that as a marketer, you have to go with what speaks to you. So me, for example, I personally love to read long form content. I love to read books. I love to read long articles. And so that's something that is some content that I enjoy producing for our audience. Whereas my friend Eric, who owns Beard Brand, he really likes to consume YouTube. And so I think that it makes it more organic and natural for him to work on YouTube. Or another example, we actually do fairly well on Reddit, but I am a Redditor and I enjoy consuming Reddit, but I also enjoy creating on Reddit. So I think that it's, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, here's how you have to use Facebook or here's how you have to use Instagram. One of the things I would mention to people is if you have a social channel that as a marketer or as a just consumer is very near and dear to your heart, that's probably going to be a good social channel for your business because you know how to use it, which shows, oh, you're just marketing at me, so I don't care. Whereas the alternative to that is you're a member of this community that's creating content that I enjoy. So that's my answer.
Great answer. And let me get back to you because you said you're on SEO trained and it's all SEO for you. So, do you have any SEO tips? And you said that people make a lot of mistakes on SEO. What are those mistakes?
So I would just go back to, again, the very building blocks of SEO, which is to say, make sure that your URL structure is very conducive to whatever keywords you're targeting. Or, okay, sorry, let me zoom back even a little bit further. So do some keyword research, obviously, which is not that hard to do these days. There are a number of articles out there that would just walk you exactly through how you generate a list of keywords that you should be targeting. Some of that is a little bit art, and some of that is science, of course. Just think about how your target user is going to be searching and trying to find the particular product or whatever page you're creating. Then do a little keyword research just to back up what your thoughts are. So you think, oh, okay, if somebody's looking for my site, they're going to be looking for barbell. Well, let me do some keyword research and let's see, are people actually searching for barbell? Are they searching for barbell for sale? Are they searching for barbell exercises? Figure out what keywords you're going to be targeting. And then what I do is I actually search for that keyword and I look at Google and I say, okay, out of the top 10 results, what is the very best page that is in the results currently, which is probably number one? And then I say, how can I make that page better so I can rise up through the rankings? And if anyone wants to do a little more research on this technique that I'm talking about, they call it the skyscraper technique. Basically, you find an awesome piece of content or an awesome page, and then you look at it and say, okay, this is the best page on this particular search term, but now I'm going to make it better. So, for example, one way to make a page better might be you rewrite it and you have an infographic on it. Or you rewrite it and you say, okay, well, this page talks about barbells, for example, but it doesn't talk about the tensile strength of the steel that goes into a barbell. That could be a great way that I could make this page better, is I could go into the tensile strength of steel and why you might want a moderate tensile strength rather than a super high tensile strength or a low tensile strength, something like that. Then when you're creating the page, write for humans. So a lot of people, when I see, usually I see like an article that someone has created on or has hired someone Fiverr or hired a poor content writer to create. You read the article and you're like, this is just a crap article. Like it doesn't read in a interesting way. And so I would make that whatever article or a product page read so that it's actually interesting to your target customer, that they're going to stay on page, they're going to continue reading, and hopefully they convert. And for some more information on that, I would look at some of the great old content writers. So if you get a lot of the direct response content writers like Gary Halbert or, oh shoot, I'm trying to remember who else is really great. David Ogilvy, Gary Halbert, David Ogilvy. I can't remember any other names just off the top of my head, but I would read what their content is. And even David Halbert, he suggested that a beginning content writer take some of the great content pieces that are out there and just take a pen and write them out by copy them and write them by hand over and over again until you've like kind of built a groove in your brain
How
to
to do
write
it.
like
Yeah,
that.
okay.
So that might be something to look into. And then I would also just make sure, people say meta tags matter, meta tags don't matter. Just make sure meta tags are germane to the page you're writing. Again, make sure the URL structure makes sense and is not like crazy long, is also not super short and has no keywords in it. Like you should have keywords in that URL structure. Make sure all your images are tagged with the appropriate keyword that you're targeting in a germane way. And then, make sure you've got lots of amazing, awesome images on the page because users really love that. So that was a little bit of a hodgepodge of SEO tips that go through my brain when I write something for
Okay.
SEO or
Okay,
for our
great.
customers.
And one final question, because then I will let you go, because definitely you have a lot of things to do. Where do you think that the e-commerce world will stand over 10 years?
Okay, wow. So
Didn't say it was going easy.
everything's
Okay.
moving to mobile. Yeah, for sure. So a couple of really big trends that I see is A, everything's moving to mobile, and of course, mobile screens are quite a bit smaller, and currently mobile conversion rate is significantly lower than desktop conversion rate. So I see in the short term a continuing degradation of conversion rate, but I think that both consumers are going to get more comfortable shopping on mobile and that shops are going to get better at mobile experience. So I think that conversion rate is going to recover as this trend accelerates. I also think that we're going to see a continued dominance of Amazon of e-commerce. I was actually listening to a podcast the other day that said that Amazon might get in the U.S. 70 to 80% share of wallet instead of the 46% share of wallet that they currently have now. I think 70 to 80% is a pretty crazy high number, but again, power laws, Amazon is running away with it. So we're going to see continued Amazon dominance, but I think that especially as Amazon's dominance increases and as they expand in other markets like the EU, that we're going to see increasing regulation aimed at targeting the monopoly power of Amazon. So I'm not sure exactly how that's going to play out, but we have seen the EU be more aggressive at legislating against monopoly activities by American-based companies than the U.S. has been itself. So that'll play out in an interesting way. I further think that we're going to see the expansion of other platforms, which in the U.S. would be things like AliExpress, things like, Wish. So AliExpress, Wish, and companies like that that are trying to disintermediate or get rid of the middleman between factories, of which right now are mainly in China, and the customer. So I think reputation systems online, online reviews, things like that, are going to continue to become more and more important. Further, I think that along with the continuing dominance of mobile, we're going to see a continued rise in apps and, of course, social media and social selling. Facebook ads are really the place to be right now if you are a marketer that is not in e-commerce but is helping e-commerce and helping other companies. And in the U.S., many people think that Facebook ads are what drove Donald Trump to president. So I think that that's something that's going to continue to get very, very interesting in the space as time goes on. So I think that's about it for my predictions. And, I think these are probably going to happen. So, but we'll see as time plays out.
Okay, thanks for the interview, and it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
Oh, well, what a lovely interview, and what a great inspirational guest. At least that's in my opinion, but let me know what you think about it, because the show is all about you and what you think about it and what you value about it. Let me be clear. I think it's great, especially if we talk about all the elephants in the rooms and the tips on SEO. So if you are interested in also becoming the SEO expert, I strongly suggest you visit hofprofit.com and check it out, because there's quite some interesting content and there is a great SEO e-course, which I definitely suggest you gonna have a look at. And with that, I would simply say I would call it a day. We have a show of around, if I was finished talking, then we are on 30 minutes. That's a great time to have it on. I would say, what do you think? I will announce on Twitter quite some great new guests today, later on. So on that side, you can all have it. Submit your questions. For the rest, I have my blogging and content writing day. And a final word of comment. Next week, I will release my tax-free passport report. So don't forget to mail it out. I will send an email campaign out to notify you about it. And I would simply say, I will talk to you on Monday. And don't forget to submit all your questions, all your, and everything you want to know. Simply visit hofprofit.com and have a lovely weekend.